This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 31. It's been a good week. It's actually been a long week. It is raining here today, so you're going to hear some tire noise, but I think the rain has actually stopped, so I won't need the windshield wipers, but we'll see. It's been a long week, been a lot of things going on at work. At the same time, I've been editing up That Fated Shore, got a lot of really good feedback from the beta readers, and so I've been integrating that in and running corrections and that sort of thing. That's going along well. I think this weekend that I'm going to have all the corrections taken care of. I'll probably dress up the cover early next week. I'll do a test run, a couple of books, get them in, see how they're doing. If they're good, then go ahead and upload the files maybe next weekend and go ahead and release that to production and then get on to the next book, which is a children's book next time. A bit of news as well. I had mentioned last week that I have exercised a little grace in my quest to go 21 days without complaining, gossiping, or criticizing. And with that little bit of grace, it is in fact today, day 21. Woohoo! So, if I can manage to make it through the next several hours and not mess this up, I will have completed my 21 days without complaining, gossiping, or criticizing with a little grace. So probably what I'll do is after I get through this, I may then turn around and try to do it without a little grace. So it's been fun. It's been good. And it's been actually very good for me. Anyways, as I mentioned, I have been working through That Fated Shore and doing corrections on it. And part of that is in the recommendations from the beta readers. Sometimes some would say, oh, this is spelled this way. And then sometimes some would say, oh, this is spelled this way. Sometimes it was the same word. So, of course, I have to do a little research, find out what's going on. I came across a particular word that I needed to do some research, and that research was strip searched. So I did my standard thing when I'm doing some research. I hopped on Google, and I typed in strip searched, because then I just glance down through the references and kind of get an idea, and if I still can't get it resolved because there's a variety of ways to do it, then I hop out to a dictionary or something like that. So I put in strip search. I think this was either Friday or Saturday of last week. And this story comes up. And I went, what? You know, so I start reading this story and I'm thinking, you are kidding me. You know, and the farther I read through this story, the more, because I'm in the middle of editing this book, the more I'm thinking, you know, honestly, if I would write characters that were doing this, people would say, your characters aren't believable. Because as you're reading this story, over and over, the reaction is, well, why didn't somebody? I mean, you can't hear about this story without going through those feelings and emotions, because it's just unbelievable. But when you do a little research, the story gets even more unbelievable as you go along. So let's try this. And then I think you'll see why suddenly I knew I had to do a podcast on this. It's 2004. You may have actually even heard this story. As I've been talking to friends about this week, a couple of them have said, oh yeah, I heard about that. And then I get to telling them more about it. And then they say, I didn't hear about that part. So stay with me. I am telling this story for a purpose, not just pure interest. It's McDonald's. It's in Kentucky. It's 2004. There is a young lady named Louise Ogborn, I think is her name, 19 years old. From everything and all the reports, she appears to be a very fine young lady, very honest, a little bit shy, hard worker. She decides that she's going to work an evening shift at McDonald's because they're usually shorthanded. It's Friday night. It's going to be busy. Her mom has gotten sick, recently lost her job, so she wants to work an extra shift, try to make a little extra money, help out at home. In other words, a lovely young woman. She has just eaten. She's getting ready to clock back in. She gets a call back to the office in the back. The assistant manager wants to speak to her. So she comes in. The assistant manager tells her, I have a police officer on the phone. And he says that he has the manager of the store on another line with him. There's been a report from a customer that a woman matching your description stole the customer's purse. And the young lady says, no, I didn't do that. You know me. I would never do that. She says, well, I'm sorry. You have a choice. You can either be searched here or we're going to call the police station and take you to the police station. Now, the young lady later did say that she asked to be taken to the police station, but apparently the caller on the line wasn't going to, you know, have that open. So he says, no, we just need to search her there. Okay, so I should tell you that the assistant manager is a woman. He tells the assistant manager, you need to have her give you, empty your pockets, you know, give her keys, cell phone, all that kind of stuff. So the young lady empties all her pockets because she says later, I was always told to do what authorities tell you to do. And then the assistant manager has this young lady undress, completely undress, takes all of her clothes, all of her underwear, puts it in this sack, gives this poor little young lady a dirty apron to cover herself with. There is video surveillance of this in the office, captured on the office surveillance equipment. So this stuff is not made up, okay? When I first started telling one person about this, they looked at me and said, so you checked it out on Snopes? I said, you know, I went out to ABC and I watched the primetime special of it, and they have the surveillance video out there, you know, with strategic parts blurred out, which is the only way that I'd want to watch it in the first place. So now there's this poor naked little young lady, and she's sitting in this office trying to cover herself up with this dirty apron, and the caller is talking to the assistant manager, and the assistant manager is saying, well, you know, I've got customers, I've got things I've got to do, we're really busy, when are you going to be able to get down here? And say, well, it might be a little while, you know, you need to bring in somebody so that can watch her, because she can't just be left alone, because she might hide the evidence, so you need to bring in somebody to watch. Okay, fine, So the assistant manager goes out and gets a 27-year-old male. Brings the male in. She hands the phone to the male while this poor little young girl is sitting in this chair mortified. The 27-year-old male holds the phone up to his ear. The guy starts talking to him. He basically puts the phone on, walks out. He just says, I'm not doing this. He walks out. To his credit, he walks out. Now, we'll talk a little later about some things he might have done, but at least he walked out. So the assistant manager comes back in and says, well, he left. Well, is there anybody else? Well, no, I don't really have any, you know. Well, are you married? Well, no, I have a fiance. Well, can you call him and get him down here? We just need somebody to be there with her, you know, for a little while until we can get down there. Well, I suppose. So she calls her fiance. This is a early 40s man who comes in, and there's this petite naked little girl sitting there trying to cover herself with an apron. Okay, this is when it starts to go bad. Because the caller then proceeds to tell the guy, well, you need to have her stand up and drop the apron so you can see if she's hiding anything. The young lady complies. Then things just start getting bizarre. And they go from bad to worse. The caller tells the guy that he needs to have the girl bend over so he can inspect her. Tells her she needs to get up on a chair and stand on a chair. She needs to do jumping jacks. Okay, I'm not making this stuff up. It's on the surveillance video with the strategically placed blurred regions. At one point, the young lady apparently does not address the man as sir, because she's kind of talking back and saying, you know, what is going on here? Please stop this. Don't do this. And so the guy on the phone says, well, she's being belligerent. You need to have her kneel down and, you know, you need to whack her hard on the butt. So So the surveillance video has this poor little girl kneeling down and this guy spanking this girl. And on the surveillance video, this goes on for almost 10 minutes. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. After this kind of stuff goes on for 2 hours, then the guy on the phone uses some excuse to convince the man, who apparently didn't need much convincing, that this young lady should perform a sexual act on him. And that happens as well. And during this whole time, the assistant manager is coming in, going out. And every time she comes into the office, the man grabs the apron, throws it back at the little girl. She covers herself up and he's, shh, don't tell. So obviously, he didn't think that this was the best thing in the world for him to be doing. As I've said before, we have a lot of road construction going on right now, so it's a little noisy in the car. Sorry about that. We're going to have one big bump, and then it will get quieter. So obviously, he doesn't necessarily think that, here's bump, there we go. He doesn't necessarily think that this was the best thing to do because he wouldn't be throwing the apron at her and covering it up. Later, the assistant manager claims that she never saw any of this going on, except there is a spot on the surveillance video where this assistant manager comes flying into the office and the young lady is off to her right and she comes into the office. The guy grabs the apron, throws it behind the assistant manager. The young lady covers up and then the assistant manager spins and walks out. I mean, it is possible that she didn't see anything if she was extremely focused on trying to get something and get out of the office. But we'll talk about that as well later. So after the sexual act is performed, then the guy on the phone says, well, we need to get somebody else. Okay, mind you, this has gone on for hours. Mind you, we need to get somebody else. So the fiance gives the phone back to the assistant manager. The guy says, well, we need to get somebody else to watch her now. So she goes out and she gets a 50-ish some odd maintenance guy who works around there. He comes in. He starts listening on the phone. He's looking at the little gal trying to cover herself up with an apron. He puts down the phone. He walks up to the assistant manager. And he says, this guy on the phone is telling me that I'm supposed to tell this young girl to stand up and drop the apron so I can inspect her. And at this point, finally, a light bulb goes off in the assistant manager's head, and she says, do what? She then frantically calls, She then frantically calls her manager and discovers that her manager is not on the line with this guy who is claiming to be a police officer. Her manager is asleep at home in bed. And suddenly somebody figures out that it would be a good idea if they call the police. The police get there in 5 minutes because the police station is only a quarter of a mile away. Of course, the police arrest the fiance. I think they took the assistant manager into custody. They rescue this poor little girl. They start trying to track down the caller. They eventually track the caller, they think, back to Florida. He's arrested in Florida. He's extradited to Kentucky. No, he never serves any jail time because the jury apparently did not feel that they had enough evidence to convict him. However, the fiance is convicted. And I think there was some sort of a suspended sentence for the assistant manager. And yes, in case you're wondering, the young lady does sue McDonald's for $200 million and eventually is awarded $6.1 million. Okay, so that's that. Now, you might be thinking, well, yeah, but that, I mean, come on, that's just like an isolated case. In fact, as the investigators were looking around, unfortunately, it's not an isolated case at all. I got a little list here that I printed out. At a McDonald's in Hinesville, Georgia, a caller convinced a 55-year-old janitor to do a cavity search on a 19-year-old cashier. While in Fargo, North Dakota, a manager at the local Burger King strip-searched a 17-year-old female employee. In Phoenix, a caller had a Taco Bell manager pick out a customer and then strip-search her. In fact, as investigators were working on this, they discovered that from 1994 to 2004, over a 10-year period, there were 70 documented cases of people prank calling and convincing managers of fast food restaurants to do strip searches or have people perform sexual acts on them. 70. Okay, well, what is going on here? Because I don't tell that story just so we can sit around and say, well, I don't know what's wrong with those people. Those people are stupid. Okay, because they're not stupid. They're average, ordinary, normal people. But there is a dynamic at work here that if we can ferret it out and come up with a principle, maybe it will help us. And in fact, there had been a study years ago done in just this vein. This idea of how far will people go when instructed by an authority figure to do certain things. I believe they were called the Milgram experiments. Very interesting. Conducted at Yale initially in the early 60s. And the idea was that there were flyers that were put up around that said, $4 for an hour of your time. That was the early 60s. I guess $4 was, you know, worth doing something for. What would happen is the volunteers that would come in, unaware to them, the other volunteer that was in the room was actually an actor. You would have the experimenter, who of course is dressed in the white smock, very severe of countenance, acted like he really or knew what they were doing. Then you had these two volunteers that would pick out of a hat to be decided who would be the teacher and who would be the learner. It was rigged so that one of the volunteer, the real volunteer, would always become the teacher. The other volunteer was in fact an actor. The two would then be split up and put in different rooms. There would be a button in front of the teacher and a dial and a list of test questions. And the idea was that the teacher would be subjected to an electrical shock just so they could feel kind of what was going to supposedly happen to the other person. And then the teacher was instructed to quiz the person who was in the other room, and every time that person got an answer wrong, the teacher would shock them. And the person in the other room would yelp. After a shock, then the dial was turned up 15 volts. The experiment was about seeing how far people would go if an authority kept telling them to continue. Mind you, the dial goes to 450 volts, which is lethal. Obviously, there were no real shocks involved, but there was a guy in the other room screaming. So the test subjects could hear this person screaming, and at one point, what would happen is the guy would like pound on the wall and scream about the fact that he has a heart condition and he's not feeling well, and then he would go completely silent, and the experiment would continue. And the idea was to see, I'm getting onto my gravel drive. The idea was to see how far people would go if they were told by an authority figure that they had to continue. They had the test, they had two conditions under which the test would conclude. First of all, if at any time the teacher expressed his desire to halt the experiment, he was given a succession of commands. These were the commands. 1, please continue. If they continued to protest, the researcher would say, the experiment requires that you continue. If they continued to protest, then the next was, it is absolutely essential you must continue. It is absolutely essential that you continue. And then the last one was, you have no other choice, you must go on. Now then, if after those four statements, the quote-unquote teacher would say, I'm sorry, I'm not doing this anymore, then the experiment would end. And it would end at whatever level the dial got to. Otherwise, the experiment would continue until the dial was cranked all the way to 450 volts and the teacher administered 3 shocks. The original experiment was done with 40 people. And they were just sort of randomly chosen. I'm getting my mail. They were just randomly chosen. And these 40 people were then put through this experiment. And I was really quite surprised, and they were quite surprised, at the number of people that actually made it to 450 volts. 65%. I think it was out of the 40 people they tested, 25, I think something like that. Anyways, I don't know what it is. 65% just kept going because an authority figure had told them to do it. And even though this person is in the other room screaming, and even though he's saying he has a heart condition, and even though he suddenly stops talking, they just keep pushing the button. Okay, so what's going on here? Well, you know, there's a lot of theories that have been advanced and put forward as to what was going on in this case. And a lot of them, you know, are kind of theme and variations. I'm backing into my garage, so I just need to look here for a minute, see where I am, get backed in. But really, when you boil them all down, they do come down to one very, very important principle. And once you get this principle, you can push it backwards into the incidents at McDonald's. The principle is this. All of the research pushes back to one idea, and that is convincing people that they have no free will. Because if you listen to the statements again, listen to them in the context of the idea of free will. Please continue. The experiment requires that you continue. It is absolutely essential that you continue. You have no other choice. You must go on. In other words, you have no free will. You just need to be a tool, be a cog in the machine. Just do what you're supposed to do. Well, one of the guys who was commenting, I've read a lot of things here and there commenting about these fast food things. One of their comments is, you have to understand that in fast food, everything's done by the book. This is the way you do it. As long as you're following the book, you're okay. In other words, you don't have free will. You're a cog in the machine. Just do your job. Be a cog in the machine. The one thing that you hear coming out of the young lady over and over as she talks about this on the news is, I didn't have a choice. I couldn't run out. I would have been embarrassed. There was nothing I could do. In other words, I have no free will. All that's going to happen to me is what other people decide to happen to me. I'm going to just plead and beg and hope that someone is going to come rescue me because there's nothing I can do to rescue myself. The assistant manager, well, the fiancé, I think he was quoted as saying, it was like someone had control of my mind and I just had to do whatever I was told. The assistant manager basically said the same thing. Well, I thought he was an authority. You know, I just had to do what he told me to do. In other words, I don't have any free will. See, the real issue here is that the one weapon that we have to keep the flesh from ruling over our lives is free will. Because the flesh is going to make all sorts of suggestions to us. It's going to try to push us in all sorts of ways and use all sorts of arguments to get us to abdicate our choice. And once it gets us to abdicate that, to just say, I'm a cog in the machine, I just have to do what I'm told, then things get really, really dangerous for us. You know, good for the 53-year-old janitor who listened to that, who knew this was supposedly an authority figure on the other line, and he put down the phone and he went back out and he said, wait a minute. This guy is saying that she's supposed to stand up and drop the apron. That's not right, is it? See, because that's all it took to break the illusion. And the assistant manager suddenly has this revelation. Oh, wait. Okay, this is bad. You know, suddenly there's this revelation. And suddenly she has free will again. So here's the principle. The principle is, if you ever hear yourself saying, I didn't have any choice, if you ever feel yourself thinking, there's nothing I can do, it's all hopeless, there's no way this is ever going to be any different than this, and this is just my lot in my life, you should really back up and take another look at it. Because there is always, always a choice. And free will is something that God has given you, and it is a precious, precious gift. Now then, without wanting to disparage anyone, there was one statement that came out of all this that I found very, very sad. And I'm looking for it in my notes so I get this right. And it actually ties right into a podcast that I've been wanting to do on why is there suffering in the world. And so we're actually going to pick up here next week and do that podcast. One of the saddest things that I heard about this was when Louise Ogborn was on the stand during the trial for the suit against McDonald's. And obviously they picked this clip to show on ABC. She was crying. And I think it was the prosecutor asked her, how has this affected you? And she was crying, and she said that she had lost her faith. She said, because I prayed and prayed, and nothing ever happened. It just got worse. Now, there's a whole lot of things that can be said about that. But I think we'll leave those for next week and just return to the idea, very important idea, that there is always free will. And if anyone convinces you there isn't, you need to back up and take another look at it, because without free will, we are led to terrible places. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.